Electric.
Mics are live.
Okay. Good afternoon. This is Julie Fedorchak with the North Dakota Public Service Commission. We're gathered on the 12th floor of the state capitol for an informal hearing on case number PU-15-747. This is in Commissioner Kalk's portfolio. He is en route to Fargo for another commitment. So he's joining us by phone. Are you there, Commissioner Kalk?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay. Also in the room is Commissioner Chrisman sitting next to me. And with a fresh new microphone with lots of batteries, so he can talk a lot. And this is the Montana Dakota Utilities Transmission Facility Cost Recovery Rates rider, and that's the discussion today we'll be on. I don't have any opening comments. I'll see if Commissioner Chrisman does.
Even after being bottled up on one of the cases this morning, I still will just pass on opening comments, except for to encourage Commissioner Kalk to drive safely.
Yeah, no kidding, while you're talking. Okay, so we'll go around the room, Brian, first, and then we'll kick it over to you for any opening comments. And then if you want me to kind of run things from this end, or you can just get it kicked off, and then we'll go from there. Does that work?
That works perfectly, Madam Chair. If you don't mind, I'll have some opening comments, but then I'll let you run the meeting if that's all right.
Sounds good. Okay, so we'll start with Jerry Lean from our staff. And then go down to Tammy. You guys can just each speak into the mic and tell us who you are.
Jerry Lane with Commission Staff.
Tammy Eberle with Montana Dakota.
Carl Liebitz, attorney with MDU Resources.
Jared Singer with Montana Dakota.
Darcy Nagum with Montana Dakota.
Stephanie Bosch with Montana Dakota.
Robert Frank with Montana Dakota.
Okay. All right, Brian, opening comments for you.
All right, thank you, Madam Chair. Just I double-booked myself today. I'm actually going to the North Dakota State there to have a mentoring program where they reach out to political, business, and other leaders. So we've got a meeting over there at 4 o'clock with a whole bunch of students and a whole bunch of folks to try to help these young men and women as they finish college find different jobs. And so it's a good opportunity for the commission and all that. So that's where I'm headed to today. The only comments I would say is I've reviewed the filing. I've seen Jerry's memo, and I appreciate the company revising their filing and lowering their ROE. The only questions I really would have to answer is that, you know, they under-earned in their previous filing. I just was curious as to a little more detail about the under-earning. And then as we go forward, not so much in this case, is when we're going to pick up those additional costs for SPP. So those are really the only questions I had, and I look forward to the discussion.
Okay. Thank you, Brian. Then it looks like they have a little bit of a presentation to give here with some PowerPoint slides. I'm assuming you don't have these, Brian, so you'll just be hearing. But if there's anything real dramatic in terms of visuals, we'll try to describe them for you. We'll leave that up to Garrett. He can act them out. Were you a thespian?
A lot of cheese.
Yes. Okay. So I'm not sure who on the MDU side is going to take charge. Carl?
Yeah, I can lead us off.
Okay.
This is Carl Liebitz.
Can you hear, Brian?
I can hear fine. Just I had it on mute, so it takes me a second. But I don't have any questions. I'll just listen to the presentation. If I have anything at the end, I'll throw it out.
Okay. Just try to talk close to the mic if you can. Okay. Yes?
That's what I was just going to say, Carl, and for everybody. You do have to talk pretty close into these microphones to be picked up.
To hear it on the phone.
Pull it right up.
All right. Well, good afternoon, commissioners. As you know, we are seeking approval of Montana Dakota's application to update its transmission cost adjustment tariff. The company is requesting to update its TRA to reflect actual costs incurred for transmission resources through August 31st of 2015, and then projected costs looking out ahead to December 31st of 2016. In the opening comments, it was mentioned that we did submit an update last week to adjust the ROE to 10.5%, which would be consistent with the renewable resource rider settlement agreement that was recently approved by the commission. And so with that brief opening comment, I will turn it over to Stephanie.
Go ahead,
It's up there.
Oh.
The receiver is in the ceiling. Isn't it, Steve?
Push.
I'll let you drive.
I'm just pushing more buttons.
We're having a few technical difficulties, Brian. Hold on. MDU's having trouble with battery-operated devices today.
No. Where's the cord? Let's plug it in.
Now we have the lights working. Now the screen doesn't work anymore.
Well, that's weird because it worked when I handed it to him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Can we manually?
We do have copies of the presentation if we want to pass those around.
Sure. Might as well. We like to write on things.
Apparently Stephanie broke that.
I must have. Playing around to make sure I knew how to work the remote.
Jerry, I guess we'll grab one. Yeah. Jerry.
Okay.
Back on.
All right. I'll let you drive so I don't break it again.
Consistent with all transmission-related PowerPoints, there is absolutely nothing of interest on any of these slides besides words. A visual interest, I should say.
I just have a couple background slides to start with. We first came before the commission in 2011 requesting a transmission cost adjustment tariff and rates. We received the order in 2012 and implemented the first rates on June 1st, 2012. The tariff provides for the recovery of costs for new or modified transmission facilities as well as for federally regulated costs for regional transmission reliability that are not reflected in our rates today. Next slide, please. Consistent with our past TCA updates, we are requesting to update MISO-related revenues and expenses for the projected 2016 time period with a true-up for the prior period from last year's filing. For the first time, however, we are requesting a revenue requirement associated with two transmission facility installations in western North Dakota. As you can see on the slide, we have three different trackers within our tariff, a residential and small general, a large general, and a lighting transmission rate. The overall average increase for residential customers amounts to about $1.82 a month. Next slide. And the next few slides will cover the costs that we are recovering or proposing to recover through the transmission cost adjustment. It's MISO Schedules 26, 26A, and then the two transmission projects.
I'm going to brief. This is Tammy. I'm going to briefly speak about the Schedule 26 and Schedule 26A costs. Schedule 26 under the MISO tariff reflects the baseline reliability projects, generation interconnection projects, and market efficiency projects. I think at this point it's primarily the baseline reliability projects that we're seeing as allocated to Montana, Dakota. So these are, again, regional type costs. A lot of those, Schedule 26 would be the CapEx projects that Montana, Dakota is a part, receives a cost share of those projects. We also have one of our own projects that was a few years ago deemed as a baseline reliability project, and that is a substation that was added over near the Heskett station, and that project is cost shared with Otter Tail Power as being deemed providing reliability enhancements to their system, and that project has been again in place since the MTEMP in 2009. So that's one piece of the cost that runs through the tracker. There is a revenue credit, which is that again that piece that Otter Tail is cost sharing in on the Heskett project. So the net amount is about $982,000. Schedule 26A is a schedule that MISO utilizes that recovers the cost for the multi-value projects, the MVPs. So as those projects are continuing to be constructed, Some are coming online. Some are in the same state as Big Stone to Ellendale, which is under construction. Those costs are allocated system-wide. Entire MISO system, those costs are cost-shared. And Montana-Dakota's load ratio share is approximately 0.5% of those costs. So those are what are reflected in on this slide. We do have a credit that we run through the transmission tracker to reflect A&G-related costs that are allocated to Big Stone, to Ellendale project, that are a credit for our customers. So the net amount for this time period is about $2 million under the MVP projects.
Before you jump slides, Tammy, and it's borderline having to do with this, but you mentioned Big Stone to Ellendale. Just refresh me, is everything done now, easements, permits, all the approvals, and you have people out there putting in poles and stringing lines, or what's the status?
Not quite that far, but we have Rob Frank with us today who can give you an exact update on that.
Just
so,
very brief.
Yeah.
Sorry. Current status is putting us near, I'd say roughly a third of the easements are paid for and acquired. Easement options have been signed on about 90% of the route. So as those easement options get turned into easements or those easements get signed, then that right-of-way would be secured. Right now, the process or the other parts of the project are RFPs for contractors and vendors to do the civil work for the line. So later this year, they'll be starting to clear the right-of-way. They'll be starting to do some of the road entry work, some of the preparation for line construction, as well as the steel towers have been purchased, or the contract has been signed with a steel vendor. So they're starting to work on design and are starting to get the towers designed, created, and ready to be constructed so that they can be shipped. We're expecting construction to start probably the beginning of 2017 after some of that initial design work is done and some of that initial civil work is complete.
I didn't ask that very well because I know I mentioned rights of way, but what I was really thinking of, though, as far as regulatory approvals, do you have everything you need?
So all of the permits that we need right now are have been gotten from the various entities. So
thank you.
That's taken care of, yes.
And Rob was describing the entire project. So a lot of that is in South Dakota with regard to easements.
Okay, thank you.
All right, so this works well. I'm going to pitch the next slide. We're moving all around the room today over to Rob, who is our Director of Transmission Engineering. So he is going to talk to you about the two transmission projects that have pictures included in this presentation. Thank you, Rob.
Visually stunning pictures. Visually stunning. Okay. The two transmission projects, we'll start with the first one is a Kenmare to Lignite transmission project. This is the slide with all the words, but I'll kind of read through this and talk about these different parts. We constructed a new 115 kV transmission line that connects our Kenmare substation to a new substation that we built in near Lignite, North Dakota. So the line runs north and west of Kenmare. It's intended to serve or provide additional load growth opportunities in Burke and Divide counties, helping our existing transmission system handle additional load growth and customer needs, as well as improving system reliability due to the need of us to, the ability of us to interject a new transmission source within a predominantly 60 kV transmission system. This was part of earlier planning studies that we had done in our company. Planning engineers sit down and model the system and again, looking at load forecasts, determine where needs are under certain contingencies and certain loading requirements. So that was identified at that time. We started this project and started right-of-way activities and route selection in 2013. The entire line is constructed on new right-of-way that we had to acquire. We installed an optical ground wire or a fiber optic shield wire on with the line. What this does, this kind of provides us enhanced communications network for our own transmission system and for our company use. The reason that it's advantageous to other forms of communication is that it's a point-to-point system that's highly secure, and you don't have any, you know, of the internet or any of this other third-party communications systems within in between point A to point B. So we install that on the line to provide that addition. Like I said, the addition of the line requires switchyard modifications to an existing substation near Kenmare, North Dakota, to interconnect. And then, like I said, the 60 kV transmission system, again, needs an interconnection point. That requires a 115 to 60 kV transmission substation at Lignite. Total projected cost or total project cost as of this time is $13 million, or a little over $13 million. And as we'll get into, Darcy will get into a little more on SPP facility credits. This entire investment of this project qualifies for SPP facility credits. We energized this line on October 28th of this year, so it's in service right now. This is a map, and I think this thing has a little laser pointer on it, so for the people in the room, I'll be able to point. So here's Kenmare. This is kind of our existing, this is the existing 60 kV transmission system here. It runs kind of through near the town of Lignite onto Kincaid, onto Zoll, back to Williston. The other one goes through Kenmare and then back over to a Dunning substation and interconnects back into Central Power. An existing 115 line comes through Kenmare, and actually we show there's another Basin Electric going to transmission line that runs east over to other substations to the east. Yes. So the other blue line, the big blue line in the middle, is the new line that we built. This is the GIS plotted actual route of that line. And the little green T up in the left-hand corner is the new Lignite substation and how that ties into this project. It is about 31 miles long. And like I had said before, the main point of the Lignite substation is to help to increase the reliability and increase loading capability or load serving capability on our 60 kV transmission system. Here's the pictures. So the picture on the left is our Kenmare substation, and the line that's in the front is the new transmission line that we built. So we had to build these new facilities within Kenmare substation to interconnect this line. The line is primarily wood or laminated wood structures. So this is a laminated wood structure. Any of our angle structures or any of the turns in the lines would require a larger engineered laminated wood pole. The other ones are round wood with horizontal insulators. This is just another picture down the line. The southern and eastern portion of the line is single pole with these horizontal insulators. The intent was to minimize the amount of right-of-way that was needed, minimize the amount of impacted area. This is kind of more of a cultivated portion of the line, and so we made the decision to try and shrink that footprint as much as we could. You can see on the bottom here there's also splice points that tie the fiber, the OPGW that goes across the top. We have to make splice points along the line. The next pictures, the one on the left is the Lignite substation. So this is a brand new substation that we built. The lines, as you can see coming in, are the existing 60 kV transmission that was on the south side of the road. This is kind of built next to a county road. We had to cross into the substation, and so you can see those connections being made there. And the picture on the right shows the northern portion of the transmission line is H-frame, two-pole H-frame structures. These, again, are meant to allow longer spans over, I would say, rougher terrain. So we choose structure types in order to either minimize the amount of poles and the amount of poles needed or minimize the footprint. So this is more typical construction as we get further north. So that's what that looks like. The next project is the Williston Little Muddy project. So This involved building a 60 kV double circuit transmission line that would allow us to interconnect to our 115 kV transmission system into an existing 60 kV loop around the city of Williston. And again, this allows us better load saving capability, increases our system reliability within the town of Williston and within that area. Again, this was also part of planning studies that were done in 2007. We started this project in 2012. At that time, again, we were constructing a new right-of-way, so that took a significant amount of time to acquire right-of-way. We're getting closer to urban areas, so easements are harder to acquire. They take more time, they take more negotiating, and cost more money. So that was a little bit longer of a process. This also has fiber optic shield wire, or OPGW, installed in the line as well. This helps to tie into our existing fiber network that we have around the city of Williston, as well as tie back into our other transmission assets and substations. The Little Muddy substation is what we call the transmission substation that we built. This is in the northeast corner of Williston. And like I said, we have existing 115 kV, and I'll show you that on the map on the next slide. $13 million, or close to $14 million for this one, and a portion of the transmission substation, so the 115 kV switchyard and the transformer qualify for SPP facility credits. The 60 kV line does not, so there is some offsetting cost recovery. The project was complete on 12/19, and so that we just finished by the end of the year. We were pushing. So you can see in here, this is maybe a little bit smaller map, but not as large of an area. But you can kind of see the city of Williston is mainly here, so this is kind of a slimmed-down map, so it doesn't get too cluttered. The existing 60 kV loop that we had around Williston kind of follows this route right here. The little blue squares are distribution substations that we have existing on our system. The blue lines are the 115 transmission system. And the line route is this line over here, this green line that runs down. So it connects here and runs up and back to our new transmission substation, which is this green T. Up in the corner up here. So we had to identify a place where we could purchase property and build a substation that made sense to serve or provide an alternate source into the city of Williston. So what this really does now is with the two circuits that run along this line, we kind of end up with a north loop that runs from this substation to that substation, and then a south loop that kind of follows the same path. So what this does is opens up this loop in the middle here. What we can also do is it then offloads some of the substation that's over here that's actually Western Area Power Administration substation that we get power out of. Offload some of that, and we are able to carry more of these distribution substations off of our new transmission system. I should say, too, that line is 9 miles of double circuit. And again, talking about the communications that's on there and the way that we can make use of that additional line to create a loop and help balance the load around the city in our service area. These two pictures on this slide show some of the construction and some of the new substation that's in behind. So this is the Little Muddy substation in the background. You can kind of see some of the equipment and some of the fence line. all of our angle structures on this line, because of the two lines or the two circuits that are on a single pole, we ended up using steel poles with concrete foundations. So you can kind of see the design of the way that these are. Again, static wire in the top, three phases per circuit, so six sides. This is looking kind of that direction into the substation. The next slide to the right is looking out from the substation and looking down the line. So where we could, we'd use single pole wood tangent structures, and where we had any kind of angles, we needed to use steel poles. You can see the existing 115 line that runs across next to the line through this area. That kind of follows that portion of the map that sits up here where we had to follow that circuit. The next slides show some of the other areas within Williston. So the picture on the left is, again, more angles that we had to make. Again, you can see the obstacles that we had to get through this area and through, again, a more urban area. It's tough for us to get a straight route. So we needed several steel structures to get through. The picture in the middle is a switching structure that we have that we tie into the existing line. So you can see that there's switches, various locations to be able to give us flexibility in our transmission switching. And then the picture on the right is some of the odd structures that we had to put in order to cross under existing transmission lines. So some of these were a little interesting to design and a little interesting to install. And then you can kind of see our line carrying on beyond that. That's my last picture slide for these projects. I think that we're, I don't know who's going next.
I'll go next. The next slide is just a summary of our costs. The top line, the $4.6 million, is the charges for Schedule 26 and 26A that Tammy had talked about. The next two lines reflect the credits that she had mentioned as well. And then the transmission projects revenue requirement for those two projects Rob just finished talking about. And then the $573,000 is the true-up for the remaining part of 2015 for a total cost to be recovered of almost $6.8 million. And these numbers do reflect the updated numbers for the 10.5 ROE on the projects.
If I could be, I still haven't got the detail I'm looking for on those true-up numbers. What was the difference? So where did that come from, that $500,000? Can you break that down with some more detail?
The main driver, Commissioner, this is Tammy Eberle, are the transmission projects, because those projects were coming into service in 15. So that was really it shows as an under recovery from our 2015 projected.
The two projects you just described?
Yes. The one was projected to be in service within 15. They both did come into service in 15, but that's what's driving that, what we show as an under-recovered balance in 2015. Other drivers, I don't have it split out, but other drivers would be projected sales not being as high as what we thought at the time, even given weather differences. So that will, we under-recover a bit because of that. So, but those would be the two primary drivers.
Why wouldn't the transmission costs be included up in the transmission projects revenue requirement? How would they be done?
It's really a matter, I guess, the way it was presented in terms of timing, because we were showing the transmission project revenue requirements. It's just a choice of presentation. And
it's based, when we set them up, we based it on the calendar year. So when we did the Schedule 26 and 26A, we project them for 2016, as well as when we laid out the revenue requirement for the projects, we did 2016. Well, the projects are coming on. We filed in October, so we estimated those, and then we brought in December those two projects.
So there's depreciation expense and such with those projects as they come into service.
So the projects are in service now?
Yes.
So will there be more costs for them next year? Like the 2016 costs are $3.1 million for those two projects, 3.2 roughly?
We will true that up once all costs are in. And so, again, we didn't do a true up here in this update. We prepared this in October. So we were still working on some estimated costs. So they're part of the true up will be those projects, as well as the SPP and other credits, I think, that Mr. Lean has identified in his memo, potential credits coming through this tracker. Mm-hmm. So that will all be trued up then in the next filing.
Do you recall what the what you had included in the rider for 2015 for the transmission projects?
It was.
For the transmission projects?
Yeah.
I think we have that number here.
If you turn to Exhibit 4 of the original filing, we have a column for the revenue requirement for those two projects for $266,000.
Page 4 of the...
Or Exhibit 4, I'm sorry, of the original filing.
Okay, so now tell me again.
There's a column labeled Transmission Projects Revenue Requirement.
Okay, so...
That's showing those coming online.
All right. So you estimated that for 2015 you'd pay $265,530.
Correct.
So that was in the $577,000.
No, that was collected already.
Last year.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. For the projects, we didn't have any projects in last year's.
So we're estimating.
This is the first year that we've included specific transmission projects in the
So September through December that
you
see.
And I'm curious why we're recovering last year for them if you never included them. Why is there a true up for those if they weren't included? Why aren't they all just? Why isn't all the costs for those just included in the 2016?
Because they did go into service in 15, so we're proposing to recover the full cost of those projects and. That would be how that would lay out.
Okay, so you just broke it down and put some of it down below and then the remainder.
Yes.
So on the 572 on step, what you had said about 200 and
60,000
were related then to recovering 2015 for the two projects placed in service, one in October and one in December.
Correct.
No, Darcy was going to walk through the SPP settlement that is not reflected in the numbers, but wanted to give you an update and a reason why.
Okay. Thank you, Tammy. Good afternoon, commissioners.
Hold on for a second here. I think what I'm going to want is, I've been following the discussion, but I would like MDU to file a little more detail, or if nothing else, just put down a paper what the discussion took place, because this true-up is not just an issue with MDU itself, with Otter Tail and Excel. And I wonder if there needs to be a little more standardized how we come up with these true-up numbers. So I'm not saying I don't support them, but I want some more detail on it. So before we move on to the next speaker, if MDU could get that, and I would like to talk to my colleagues more about this whole true-up mechanism and making sure we're not double-counting and how we're getting better visibility, because I'm uncomfortable how these true-ups just seem to be, we have to true it up, and I think sometimes we miss some of the discussion on it and as to the why.
Okay. Fair enough.
Our settlement agreement with Southwest Power Pool at FERC, that agreement was filed with FERC on December 10th. There were no intervention comments opposing the settlement. And we appreciate the commission's support in the letter that was filed in support of the settlement agreement. We are expecting, I think, tomorrow that the judge in the settlement proceeding will certify that the settlement agreement was uncontested, and that really leaves the door open then for FERC to issue a decision on the settlement, which we would expect 60 days after the filing, which would be around February 8th. In that settlement agreement was the mechanism where we talk about the calculation of our facility credit amount, and that would go against our transmission bill with Southwest Power Pool. So after completing our MISO Attachment O for 2016 and the facilities that are agreed upon in the settlement agreement and then the allocation methodology that's a part of that, we're estimating, or we did provide to Southwest Power Pool a notice that our credit amount for 2016 will be roughly $11.5 million. And that will be against a transmission bill that's $14 to $15 million is what we're expecting it to be. Also including in the offsetting estimates to that is our transmission agreement with Basin Electric, which is our common use agreement, is going away as well, and they'll be taking MISO transmission service for us for use of our facilities instead of having use under common use. That also provides another $2.5 million approximately of offsetting adjustments, at least on that transmission bill or the increased bill we're getting from Southwest Power Pool. Now, we did start taking transmission service from Southwest Power Pool on October 1st, and that was the replacement of an incremental transmission service agreement that we had with Western, so it was about 36 megawatts. That agreement, at least taking incremental service, ended on December 31 when our WAPA transmission service agreement ended. So we are now taking full transmission service for all of the load that's west of Beulah and down at Glenham in South Dakota and loads west. So that'll be about 280 megawatts of service that we're taking from Southwest Power Pool as of January 1. Based on the settlement agreement that we have and also the netting of costs that we have, we talked about with Basin, some of the costs from taking MISO service. We are now estimating that the net increase over what our 2015 costs were for this bundle of charges for transmission service is looking like it'll be somewhere around a net increase of maybe $500,000 instead of the up to $3 to $5 million that we were talking about before. That's one of the reasons, and a few other unknowns still as we get final transmission rates for SPP, is one of the reasons we did not decide to include this, at least as part of the transmission tracker at this time. Once we actually get the bills that come in, and there's a few other unknowns with Southwest Power Pool as far as what their actual rate will be for 2016, our estimate of the $250,000 was using the 2015 rate for Western and Basin's transmission zone, and also some of the other adjustments when we know what Basin is actually taking for service from us from MISO. We'll come back in, and any sort of difference that we have, we'll go through the adjustment for the end of next year when we see what the actual impact of this is. But at this point, we've decided not to include the Southwest Power Pool adjustment, at least in the transmission tracker.
Is this what you're saying to Darcy, really?
Hey, Darcy, that's good news, I guess, from my viewpoint. Tell me this, now that the Southwest Power Pool is in there with Basin, how much does that change your planning process, and how much do you have to coordinate with them? And then why would we ever build 41.6? Why wouldn't we always build 60 or greater? We always get those kind of credits.
Yeah, so the planning, you know, still continues at the local level and on MISO's level. We're now reviewing the SPP transmission modeling in the same area, and they're including our credited facilities in their models. So if they see impacts, they'll work with us to come up with potential mitigations, and we would have opportunities to own those mitigation projects and also to get recovery as additional credits. I think as Rob was talking about, a couple examples would be if they would have identified Canmere to Lignite or a project like that in the future, we're actually including that entire project as far as eligible for facility credits through this formula that we have in the settlement agreement. As it pertains to the Little Muddy project, you know, one of the distinctions is to qualify for credits, it has to serve more than just our customer load. And at least the 60 kV lines coming into Williston only serve MDU's load now, because the co-ops have pulled their load off our system there on the 60 kV side inside Williston. But the 115 upgrades all qualify for, and additions qualify for credits. So, but it certainly, as Commissioner Kalk, as you've mentioned, you know, we're certainly taking a look at, you know, opportunities and planning and what it means for certain voltage classes of facilities, those 60 kV and higher, would qualify for credits, so we will keep that in mind going forward.
All right, thank you, Darcy.
No, it's great news that we're able to offset the all new SPP costs with the credits that we have using MDU systems. So initially thought it was $4 to $7 million range to be able to offset that. So it's good negotiations on the
Very good. I like that. I have a few questions, unless Brian or Randy have any related to what Darcy said. Any more for Darcy?
None here.
Oh, Jerry has one for Darcy.
I can't hear Jerry when he talks.
Yeah, you got to pull it up, wave up.
In the filing, Darcy, it says that the equate to net SP charges about $2.2 million. Is that old?
That would be an old number. And so that when we were negotiating the settlement, you know, of levels of service we were taking, we were estimating something maybe closer to 300, 325 megawatts of service.
Okay.
Instead of the 280 we think we'll be at. And then also, at least on Basin's load, we've kind of increased the amount of service we believe they're taking from us as well. Or really did the two net changes.
Okay, that was all I needed. Thanks.
Okay. I want to backtrack a little to the MISO stuff with what Tammy went through. If I'm reading this, maybe some of the numbers have changed from the original filing, but what's the total number allocated to North Dakota that you're seeking to recover here? Is it 6.8 million?
Commissioner, I think...
From the total, I'm not just...
Yeah, if you look at slide, if we could go back to that slide, maybe that's... We have the transmission projects in two pieces there. The Schedule 26 and 26A costs, so that's the baseline reliability and the MVP, are about $4.6 million.
Hold on. Which slide is this?
That would be slide with no numbers.
Okay.
Yes, right for the transmission projects. And I printed mine different.
Okay.
Okay. So... if we go back to that summary slide.
Please. Okay, so I got the other stuff. Let's just focus on the MISO schedules 26 and 26A.
Yeah. So those are the gross charges, the $4.6 million. And again, these are estimated costs because MISO will do an indicative charge as they accumulate all the revenue requirements for all these projects. They post what they call an indicative price, and that's what we've utilized here. So then we true that up in the next filing. So this is what we are estimating that we will be allocated costs through those two schedules for the upcoming year.
And is that, if I'm trying to explain this to a customer, does that the sum total of all their MISO charges?
No, that would just be these transmission type charges.
Okay.
For transmission service, for transmission, it would be the bulk of the expenses. It is the transmission expenses.
Okay.
But I was thinking about MISO energy and
right. What we're getting from MISO for this, how would you describe that? What do customers get from MISO in exchange for this $4.5 million?
It's really that regional reliability enhancements for the baseline reliability and for the MISO projects. It's really that moving power across that entire MISO grid. So wind out of here and other sources coming back direction. And so it's that bulk. It's supporting that bulk transmission system.
Darcy, all transmission feel free to add. From MISO, right?
These are the transmission-related costs that are allocated from others to MDU system, in addition to our own baseline reliability project that we have over at Mandan.
All transmission-related costs from MISO?
For investment. So there are other costs, like the tariff admin, some of those other pieces that are additional schedules that MISO does charge. These are the charges that pertain to transmission investments that are cost-shared.
So 26 had RECB charges in it.
Yes.
And they went away for the future projects. There's no cost sharing for reliability projects anymore. So up till this point, there were things like a couple of the CapEx lines and some other things that got regionally cost shared.
Mm-hmm.
And so they went into 26. And there's other cost sharing. They dreamed up something called market efficiency projects. And so that is expected to maybe take off more later. Things are changing. 26A is the MVP projects, which the Ellendale to BSEE line is one. And I think CapEx got a couple. And then there's like $6 billion worth of total investment in those lines around the country. And the whole MISO footprint gets a kilowatt hour charge on them.
I'm wondering, and I could probably do this with you, Jerry, but it might be just as well to do it with the company to go through. Is it Exhibit 7 on the original filing that kind of includes all those Schedule 26A charges? And is there a similar one for just 26?
Exhibit 7 is the Schedule 26A. So the first three columns reflect just the Big Stone to Allendale line. We've pulled those out. And then in the middle three columns are the rest of the MVP projects that we are allocated a portion of those costs.
And is that the entire MISO system?
Yes. Yes. So that indicative charge that Tammy had talked about, if you look at footnote 5, that's the rate that MISO published in early August, I believe, for Schedule 26A.
Okay.
And then the two columns labeled retail rate credit, that's what we're crediting back to customers for A&G costs.
Okay.
And then so the net is the far right column for Schedule 26A that is included in our transmission tracker.
So it would be the third column plus the sixth column minus the ninth column is the tenth?
Yes.
Okay. That's the $2 million.
And then if you go to Exhibit 6, that is the Schedule 26 costs. And that indicative charge that Tammy had mentioned is noted in footnote 1. It's the 3.2.
Okay, start over on this one, please.
Okay. Exhibit 6 is for Schedule 26.
Yep.
So...
And what does this include again? Schedule 26. I don't see any projects on here. What kind of charges are these? And I'm not questioning you guys. I just want to better understand what MISO is charging all of us.
So Schedule 26 includes the baseline reliability projects that were cost-shared before that cost allocation methodology went away. So the CapEx lines in Minnesota qualify for that. That makes up one of the largest portions. The other one that you end up with is generator interconnections. If they had improvements to lines that were 345 kV and higher, there is a cost allocation component of that that goes on a regional basis. And then the other one, as Jerry said, that falls into that is market efficiency projects, if there were any, would also fall into Schedule 26 as well.
Who goes through from your company and looks at all these charges from MISO and verifies that they're all fair and as they should be?
So one of the planning engineers and system operations looks at those, because when projects are deemed eligible for cost allocation and sharing, it's on a specific project-by-project basis, and there are assumptions that were used, at least on the baseline reliability projects for CapEx, that we verified those assumptions. And at least on the line that went from Fargo to St. Cloud, I know we found an error in the initial allocation that reduced what we were originally going to charge by, like, I don't know, to a fifth or a tenth of what the original estimate is. So, but we do look at those projects from a planning basis to make sure what's being allocated to us are correct and they're the right ratios and numbers.
Mm-hmm. If I could just follow up on that exact point. Are there any surprises when you follow up? Or was the original agreement clear enough that this turns out to be pretty much right on what you were expecting it to be?
Are you saying from the cost where we're allocated, or as far as on what how the project
that MISO is passing on, the true up? Any surprises here to you, other than what you corrected them on?
No, I think the corrections really just are in initial allocations and percentages. Otherwise, it really is just a formula rate is what they're applying. Okay. So it's pretty straightforward.
And on those MVP projects, the middle column on Schedule 26A, there's a list somewhere, and that's all verified that, yes, these all should be in there, and what we're getting charged is accurate.
So the Schedule 26A are only the multi-value projects. So that's the 18 projects that made up that $6 billion portfolio. Again, they're specific projects, and they're specific reporting that MISO receives from the owners of those. So, again, it goes back to just a formula rate. and it's allocated out on a per megawatt hour basis or usage as far as for each particular year as it comes along. And then there are also adjustment mechanisms for over and under collecting that flow back through the respective transmission owners. You know, if usage in the footprint was higher than expected, they're recovering under a particular rate they've published. But what happens is there is a potential true-up mechanisms as well, as if a transmission owner was over-collecting or MISO over-collected, there's a true-up mechanism going forward that basically makes sure they're only recovering what their actual cost should have been.
Okay. So it just seems to me there's so many opportunities for over-collection on and all these different steps, and I mean, there's a part of me that fears at some point somebody's going to audit MISO and find out that they've been over-collecting and nobody caught it, and then there's going to be you guys and us and looking like, well, geez, why weren't you asking hard questions along the way? And you're just like, oh, that's the formula, so that's what we're paying. So assure me that there's steps in your company that's really scrutinizing what you're being charged from MISO and not just passing along a formula to us who then just feels like, well, we've already signed these agreements and now we just have to pass this along to the customers.
And the other one, just to mention, we talk about our formula rate. You know, those use our audited financials at the end of the year. And so really everyone has the same way. There's some audited financials that they're eventually tracking back to as there's any true-ups or adjustments that are made, particularly in forward-looking rates. From our standpoint, and, you know, system operations and the bills when we receive them, you know, we're reconciling all the bills as they come in, making sure the charges are appropriate. And in a lot of cases, it pertains on the market side, we're actually doing shadow settlements to verify what we're supposed to be getting charged. And we try as best as we can, you know, to balance those down to the penny. Mm-hmm. And so we actually have an individual who is used to be an auditor that's responsible for that whole process. So.
And who audits MISO?
Let's see. I'll get the exact auditing firm, but we do receive an audit report from there. Each MISO partner receives
okay.
an audit report. And I'd also just add that FERC has also established what they call rate protocols, because these are formula rates. And so there's, in the last 2 years, three, there's been a lot of focus on that. Obviously, you know, as all are concerned, a lot of dollars. So those rate protocols require all of the transmission owners that have any cost-shared projects to provide information to FERC, to hold public meeting, customer meetings. And customers could ask questions about them. And so that really each TO is called to walk through each one of their schedules, their projections, and their true-ups. So a lot more oversight, I think, than what we saw initially. And so at the end of that process, then we actually submit all of that information to FERC. So that would, again, be any transmission owner that is cost-sharing a project. And MISO also, as they're working through and accumulating all this revenue requirement information, from our perspective, they send it back out to us, confirm. So that's, again, at the front end of the stage that we confirm that these are the costs that we've submitted. And then, again, that would follow through with, as charges come through, with Darcy's group.
Okay. All right.
If I could, Julie, the questions you're asking are right on point, and I think it's the constant oversight that we've got to have on these cost allocation changes and how these things get applied. And we've got two transmission meetings coming up. One is the RTOs are coming in to talk about the Clean Power Plan. The other is we have the investor owns coming in. I think we could put this as a breakout topic that we discuss in a little more detail with all the transmission owners. So I think you're right on there. And if I could, Madam Chair, I've got to drop off for another phone call at 2:30, but I don't have any other questions, but I'm going to drop off unless there's anything else with me.
I think we're close to wrapping up, so that's fine, Brian. Thank you.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Okay. Anybody else have any questions? Commissioner Christman? Jerry?
I will just say I like Brian's idea of
I do too. Yep.
I had one question.
One of us should probably learn how to shut a phone person off rather than.
The one thing you never want to do?
Do not turn off. There's a big sign. That was turned over.
Usually
an
this
upside way,
right?
Down. Upside down sign, backwards flipped behind. Does that help?
It's supposed to be like this.
I want to write that on both sides.
Put one right on the button that isn't to be touched.
Sorry about that. It just
oh, something about this reminds me of the Wizard of Oz. Didn't he do?
Who's that little man behind the curtain?
Pay no attention.
Yes, exactly. Pay no attention.
Okay, I think we're good to go.
Okay. Do we need to make any... Can we just continue? All right, Jerry, why don't you ask your question then, and we'll get a full discussion on tape.
So the question was for the Lignite to Kenmare project. The cost that appeared in the filing was $11.8 million, and the slides presentation had it at 13-something. So are we looking at cost overruns, and will they go into the true-up?
So the costs that were submitted, I think in the original filing, were based on certain costs that were already accrued or charged to the work order. And there are some costs that weren't in yet from
existing work that had been done or material that had been purchased but hadn't been allocated into.
His mic died.
Okay, this will work. Okay. So when we gave this dollar amount, it had to do with certain invoices from contractors and certain material that hasn't been received into the work order yet. So those charges weren't in there. Yep. And so that's what we're talking about, a true-up for both of these projects. Same thing with the Little Muddy project as well. Since we only finished construction in December, there will be invoices and things in January here that we will still pay and certain material that will be charged into that work order, into that total cost. It's not a... It wasn't, a place where we had a charges that we didn't expect. It was just that they weren't originally in there.
I understand.
And some of that stuff is hard to estimate before we get the true costs of what's going in. So,
So, Jerry, that's a good question. The total projected cost I see here in your original filing was 11.7, and what did it end up at?
13 point something.
And here we have 13.1, I believe. $13,187,642.
Okay.
So we'll end up with a little bit of revenue requirement shortage in our base revenue for the 2016 year, and that would fall into the true-up over-under recovery account during 2016, along with the SPP charges.
So your projection was 1.5 million off, is that right?
We'll see, but that would be like rate base number. And so you'd have a return on that, which would be, oh, I don't know, what, 10% of that?
Yeah, this would be total yeah. project cost. So then that includes certain percentage of what we would a return on.
Yeah, so it's not $2 million that would go into the over-under recovery. It'd be that revenue requirement amount on that. And again, it was we didn't have all the final costs, so we put in known costs at the time.
Yeah, 10% plus taxes.
Yes, around 15.
Approximately $200,000.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll have to still be collected.
Over the year, yeah.
And how about for the other one? The total projected cost of the Little Muddy.
And that one was a little closer to what I had, but you know, costs could still be coming in January from it.
Right.
Okay.
So this is a current number as well. The 13.8 is a current number. And again, there was more of an estimate that was put in for a Little Muddy. Ken Riddle Ignite, there was, again, some charges that weren't put in there. A big driver of that was related to the way that we ordered material for the project. Material went into an inventory account and then gets charged to the work order. So some of those things that were kind of in our own accounting in different areas that weren't put into the, mm-hmm. I guess, the final work order.
So when you're calling something a projected cost, to me, you're projecting out what it's going to be. And it sounds to me like what you're doing is saying what your costs were to date. Like, is that...
I would agree on the one. We weren't consistent in those two project costs. Yes.
So that
I would admit that.
You weren't really projecting. You were just saying our costs to date.
For the one, yes, yeah. project.
All right. Okay. Anything else, Randy? Jerry?
Not questions, but I would point out in my memo that one thing we never did talk about here was the FERC ROE complaints and the money that they're collecting right now from on FERC return of 12-point-some percent is probably going down a couple of percentage points. And that's subject to refund. And so there will be a FERC refund that I don't know if we'll get it this year in 2016, but if it were to come in 2016, it might offset these costs that we're looking at from SPP and the cost differences on these transmission projects, or at least part of them. I don't know what to expect for total dollars out of it, but I'm hoping for a good refund there.
So the entire, all of the cost share, all of those projects will be trued up to the certain refund dates once that those cases are final. And so those true-ups will come to us, and, of course, then we'll come back through the tracker.
And, Darcy, what's the status? I believe it's in front of FERC to decide or to arbitrate on
The ALJ issued an initial decision in it, December 22nd, I think it was, and he said 10.32%, and now there's, like, OMS is working on a brief of exceptions to that decision, and we have a draft ready to file on it. You know, OMS think that's too high still, and other parties probably think it's too low. But they'll get briefs now and arguments to the first. But there were two of those two cases.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow or other, two complaints got two different case numbers and two different proceedings. And so this is only the first proceeding. I don't know what will happen in the second proceeding. And I don't know why they split them like that either.
And the refunds go all the way back to November of 2013?
One of the cases has... They have different refund dates. That's probably why they're split. But,
oh, yeah, February of 2015.
Yeah.
Well, do you think that's why they're split? Because there's...
Probably different refund dates. Cases, yeah, different dates. But you know, they, somehow they got to end up, I think, with the same ROE.
So I think there were... Two separate. There's the initial complaint, you know, for at least the 12.38 being unjust and unreasonable. And then after FERC came out with that, there was a secondary complaint that came in from that first intercomplaining, which I think dealt with what the interim sort of ROE should have been back to, like, the refund. So they're related, but they're not.
Okay.
I think the other one, we've heard that if it runs its normal course, people would expect... At least it's from the ALJ's, you know, preliminary suggestion to all of the other procedural pieces. It could be this fall that we would get something as far as for a final order, and then that starts like a 60-day refund period that historically takes more than 60 days to redo all of the transmission settlements back to the refund date. So the other one I would mention, Jerry, we talk about the 12.38. That also is a part. The current ROE is in our SPP facility credit amount. So that's another adjustment that occurs, is if it moves to something else, then that also reduces the amount of credits we get against SPP.
Oh, okay. So the SPP doesn't go down, just the MISO credits go down. Okay.
Hey. Super simple stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I don't have any more questions, Randy.
I do not.
Okay, well, that concludes the informal on case number PU15-748. Thank you, everyone, for being here and for your good information.